Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Freedom Nation podcast. And once again, I have another fantastic guest today. Josh Carr is coming on. Josh is an entrepreneur's entrepreneur. He's going to share with us a lot of his successes and businesses that he started up. He'll also tell us a little bit about a transition he made at age 30. With a bucket list that I think you'll really get a kick out of. So stay tuned. We'll be right back on in just a second.
Welcome to the Freedom Nation podcast with Jeff Kickle. On this show, Jeff shares his expertise in financial and retirement planning from a different perspective. Planning for your Freedom Day, which is the first day that you wake up and have enough income or assets and do not have to go to work that day. Learn how to calculate what you need, how to generate income sources, and listen to interviews from others who've done it themselves. Get ready to experience your own Freedom Day.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the show. Josh, how are you, my friend?
I'm good. How are you?
I am fantastic. Looking forward to having you on today. It was fun having the quick conversation ahead of time, learning a little bit about you and what got you to where you're at. So why don't we start off? Tell us a little bit about your story and what got you to where you're at today.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, you know, there's this conversation that goes on of like entrepreneurs, are they born or are they made? And, you know, I think it's a little of both, right? I was a little bit on the born side. I was the kid who would save his Halloween candy and then sell it to his brothers and sisters and the neighbor kids when they ran out, you know. And,
there you go.
I don't know if you remember Family Ties, that old TV show. My mom thought, oh, you're like Alex P. Keaton. She'd always say that. I was a little young at the time. I didn't know what she was even talking about, but I've since learned what that reverence was.
Looked at it and said, I take that with pride. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. You get caught up, like life starts to happen instead of you forming it. It happens to you. And I think some of that is natural. Like, you're kind of in a position sometimes where you take the choices that are available and in the expediency of the moment, right? And so went to college. I was working in corporate world, married, had, three kids at the time. And cleaning out my office at home and just going through things and figuring out what I could get rid of or whatever, I came across this folder from college where our teacher had made us make a list of 100 goals we wanted to accomplish in our life.
Nice.
And some of them I'd done. I had gotten married and I had a family, check. And then some I hadn't. And most I hadn't, honestly.
Right.
So I was 30 years old and I saw that list and it like kind of led me to this midlife crisis, if you will. Hopefully I live longer than 60, but
I was going to say that's a little early for midlife crisis, but we'll go with it.
Hopefully it's a trimester crisis or something.
Yeah, so, there you go.
But I was like, I haven't done any of these things. I'm already 30 years old. Okay. I haven't done any of these things. When am I going to do them? I'm like, I'm going to do them right now. And so I quit my job and like gave up the perception of security and just went out on my own and tried to figure it out. Some people say, the smart thing is you have a plan, you ease into it, you have it lined up. I didn't have anything. I was like, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm just going to go solve this problem. And I think most people would have the same kind of thing happen to them that happened to me. But within a month, I was making more on my own, just hustling, than I had in my corporate job. Right.
Sure.
And I've never looked back. I've done lots of startups since then, all sorts of businesses, variety of industries. Some have failed and some have worked and some worked a little and some worked a lot. And, but I like to think that I learn faster and fail faster than anybody. And, within those, if two people are approaching the same goal and one's making mistakes faster, then they're going to arrive at what works faster. And so mm-hmm. you win. And so, no, there shouldn't be any fear or shame around any of that.
No.
And some ideas are good and some are bad and some are good and wrong timing. And so, but yeah, it's, and now today I'm CEO of a company called Echo Water. We make hydrogen water bottles and actually have one here. This was actually one of my goals on my bucket list was have a patent. This is my first patented product. I'll hold it in front of my face. You can see it. It's a hydrogen flask. So it generates hydrogen water inside of the bottle by using electrical current to separate the hydrogen and oxygen from the molecule and put them into different. The oxygen comes out the bottom and the hydrogen goes into the water.
Okay.
And this is something I learned on my journey. Just as I got older, I found out I had a genetic arthritis. And I was having all sorts of struggles. And a friend of mine introduced me to hydrogen water, which is hydrogen's what your body naturally uses as an antioxidant and gets rid of the inflammation and all those problems. And I responded really well to it. And it like made my health so much better. And so I was like, how come nobody knows about this? So I saw an opportunity there. And then we teamed up and launched that in 2023. It's been great. It's been a big success and been a lot of fun. So
I had not heard about this at all. So
and most people haven't. And you know, I felt like I was pretty well informed about things. And
sure,
I felt like I've been approached with every single possible natural and medical solution to my arthritis. And then he said, "Try this," and I didn't think it would work. I was pretty skeptical. And it's a very natural way. Like, I think most people know, but our gut health has been destroyed by our lifestyle, our diet, antibiotics, all the things. And we suffer from that in a multitude of ways. And it's starting to come out that many diseases are linked to a dysfunction in your microbiome. And a lot of autoimmune diseases seem to have that connection. And one of the things that should be happening in your gut is as food ferments, it creates hydrogen. And your body then knows what to do with that, where to send it, how to use it so that you're not in pain and that you're, you know, not swollen and you're, and the, it feeds mitochondria and other systems. And so your metabolism works better. And there's, anyway, we have a website called Hydrogen Studies where there's thousands of studies on hydrogen and health benefits. And there's all this research and yet nobody knows about it. And so, that's the story that we've been telling us. And everyone's like, that sounds like a scam. I'm like, I know it does sound like a scam.
It does
look at the research. It's real.
But it works. Yeah.
Yeah. And it works. So, but it's the truth of it is it's new. And the first study came out in 2008. So in the medical world, 2008 is a brand new baby.
Sure.
And
absolutely.
You know, it takes 20 years for anything to hit the mainstream. In technology and other spaces, it's instantaneous, but in medical, it moves slow. It doesn't make sense it moves slow. You know, it's your body, you want to be a little more conservative. So, so we're one of the first companies to do this and made a super cool bottle and we sell it on our website, echowater.com. You can go check that out. It's available all over the world now. So every day we're shipping to countries all over the world, places I've never even heard of. So it's really fun.
And they're just kind of, how do your clients typically find you? Are they doing research on hydrogen and then they kind of back into where you guys are?
Yeah, it's a lot of times there's kind of a biohacker trend where people are looking for alternatives to not just fix their health problem, but to improve their health, right? How do I do even better than my normal? And the biohackers were kind of the first over the wall with a lot of things. And so this became very popular with biohackers. Then it became popular with nutritionists and athletes. And so we have a huge number of professional athletes that use it for recovery and part of their hydration ritual. You know, almost everybody's taking electrolytes now and almost nobody needs them. But these high-performance athletes do, right? If you're playing in an NBA game, you're probably taking electrolytes a couple hours before the game, halftime, you know, multiple times in the game, and you're sweating so much, you need it. And the rest of us who just sit on the couch, we're probably fine without them. But a lot of athletes and colleges are starting to pick it up. The USA women's hockey team used our products, and they won the gold. So there you go. We can't advertise that, but I could say it on this.
But hey, you know what? They did it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, if you want to advertise it, you got to pay those rings millions of dollars. Yeah. So, yeah, but they all used it and it worked great for them. And
but let's say they did a fantastic freaking job. So you had a little piece of that.
I hope so. They're all such great athletes. So who knows if they needed it or not? But you know, if you're an athlete and it gives you a 0.5% performance advantage over a competitor. Well,
at that level of athletics, mm-hmm. that little tweak can be, you know, that little tiny difference. And so many times they're in a hundredth or a thousandth of a second difference. Yep. And that little whatever helps. So,
and I'll tell you for me, so mine, I'm not an athlete, right? On my bucket list, I ran a couple marathons and things like that. I've done some of those, but as the arthritis set in, it's a genetic arthritis, so I've had it for some time. But as it set in, my ability to do that went away, and I got to the point before I started drinking hydro water where I wasn't able to go up and down the stairs. I hadn't been upstairs in my house in 3 years.
Jeez.
And my kids still make jokes about it, like that'll never know what I'm doing because he doesn't go upstairs, you know. And I hadn't gone upstairs in 3 years before I got introduced to it. Now I can go up and down the stairs just fine. It doesn't bother me. I can go on hikes and I can do all sorts of things I wasn't able to do before. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if it'll work that way for everybody, but it certainly did for me.
For you, it did. Yeah. And I mean, for other people, it might. Yeah.
Yeah. We get a lot of amazing success stories.
A relatively small investment in money, it's worth a try to see, okay, does that help or is that helping me?
Yep. And if you're in pain, it's worth a shot. So.
Yeah, that's awesome. So, you know, when you've had multiple successes in the startup world. So how do you typically come at that? Is it typically from a personal aspect of, hey, I think this might fix me? Or is it, hey, I see an opportunity and I'm going to pursue that opportunity?
It's always opportunity based. Because I was using hydrogen water when the guy who founded the business approached me. And I was between startups at the time. I was actually working on a different startup. And he was like, would you like to partner on this? You know, I'm at this stage. I'd like to move in a different direction. And or bring in someone I can trust and help me, you know. And so that was a unique opportunity. That was the first time I partnered with somebody. Every other time it's just been, or at least somebody who has have been moving forward already, right?
Okay.
But usually I've got a couple things that I can do, and maybe this is helpful for people. I can throw this out. But there are a few ways to do a business. Everyone thinks you have to invent something brand new. And that's like the most rare kind. Like I need
an
idea.
And it's the most difficult route because you've not only got to invent it, but you got to figure out how to market it and everything else.
Yeah. If I wasn't able to go for years without pay, I wouldn't have been able to do this business because nobody knew about it.
Yeah. Right?
So we knew we'd spend 5 years creating awareness and before it became even recognizable. But you don't need a fresh idea. You need to either do something that's established and out-operate your competitors. Right. Like if you took a carpet cleaning business and you gave great customer service and did a great job and were consistent, after 20 years, you may have the biggest carpet cleaning business in your region because nobody else sticks with it that long. No one else gives good service. Now you're like a very, very successful entrepreneur and you did something that's so mundane and so easy. And like, there's almost no barriers to entry for a business like that. And the number of failed carpet cleaning vans available on Craigslist, you know, there's almost no cost to get involved in that. Or window washing. I have a friend that did this with window washing. He started in high school washing people's windows. Now he's got a whole crew and they do the high rises and they rappel down and they do, you know, they're on the high end of the window washing business, but he's still doing it after 30 years, he's washing windows. He makes a great, great living, right? So you don't need to do anything revolutionary. You just need to take something that exists, a need that exists, and do it well. And there's business out there. Now, the other way to do it is there are always opportunities. If you take two things that were formerly not connected and connect them, there's business opportunities within this. And we could do this game right now and do a little brainstorm.
and come up with some ideas, but like, why don't you just name two things you can see in your office or on your desk and we'll come up with a few ideas.
Cell phone and a calculator I'm looking at right now.
All right. So cell phone and calculator, that's a really interesting one because the cell phone is a calculator and it's a convergence of those things, right? So business ideas along that is like, could you build a better calculator for the cell phone? Could you build a specific calculator for the cell phone? Like what's your background and experience in? Are you an actuary? Are you in construction? Are you into media buying? Yeah. You know, every industry, is it golf, right? Every industry has these things that are nuanced to that industry. Could you make an app that is a special calculator for the cell phone? Now, you can go the other way too, make a physical product. Like, would people be interested in buying a cell phone cover that has a calculator on the back? Would someone be interested in getting an advanced something you could plug into the bottom of the cell phone that does additional calculations? Or a calculator with Bluetooth that can talk to a cell phone and synchronize what you're doing on the calculator with the phone, right? I don't know if any of those are good ideas, but we're just throwing stuff out there.
But their idea, and there are different ways of coming at the same conversation, basically.
Yeah. And those two things were not connected before, right? But we just came up with six or seven ideas, and we could probably come up with 20 more if we spent a few minutes doing it. Those are the two things that were formerly not connected that are now connected, and where the crossover is where those opportunities exist. And most of those will fail, right? But some of those would work. And as you go through your life and you start making those connections, it's Scott Adams, the guy who wrote the Dilbert cartoons. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's a really great thinker. I don't know if you've read any of his books or followed his blog. He's one of those guys. Actually, in 2015, when Trump was at less than 1% of the poll, Scott Adams, who's not, he gets called right wing and all sorts of things now, but at the time, everyone just thought of him as like normal guy,
the weird cartoon guy. Yeah.
Yeah. But he predicted that Trump would win the presidency at 1% because of how Trump talked and some of the things he did. People thought he was crazy, but he turned out to be right. But he's just a really, really intelligent guy. I think he may have passed away now from cancer.
I think so. Yeah. I think recently. Yeah.
He had it for some time. He has this idea he presents called like a value stack or an opportunity stack, where you take the different things you're good at, right? Like, what are some of your talents, Jeff?
Well, I mean, being able to talk on camera, I'm good at finance and numbers. I mean,
what are you good at hobby-wise outside of this?
Hobby-wise? I don't have a lot of hobbies besides work.
Look at this right here. One of my employees made this for me. Can you read that? Let's see.
Work is my hobby. Yep.
Yeah. Work is my hobby. But yeah, I'm kind of the same way. But, you know, do you golf? Do you?
I golf. So what I always tell my clients, you know, it's like, okay, you don't want a financial advisor that's good at golf because they're not actually doing their job. So I live up to that all the time. I enjoy going to play golf. I don't have the patience to spend 4 hours on a golf course, unfortunately.
Yeah. So, well, let's throw some things at you that you're good at: numbers, financial planning. You're good at communication. I would assume you're persuasive, right? And, you know, maybe you're a good cook and you're, amount about Chevy engines or something, right? So if you take those things, imagine transparencies from the sixth grade, and you take those and you stack them up. As you start to arrange them, you'll find a pattern where your unique talent set lines up, and you're the best in the world at this one weird, nuanced thing. And within that is a business opportunity. And so for Scott, he was saying, I'm not a good artist, and I'm not that funny, but I worked in banking for 20 years before I started this cartoon. And so I knew the dumb things that happened at the office, and I could draw well enough, and I was just funny enough that if I took those dumb things, and then he said, but the thing that really made me stand out from other comics is they were artists, not salesmen. And he's like, I was a salesman. So I called every newspaper, every magazine, I called everybody, and I'd give it away for free. I'd do whatever I could to get it out there. And that's what made me successful. And so when you align those things, right, like you look at the Dilbert, it's not this brilliant artwork. right?
No.
It's not even funny. It's just kind of like a little smile or a chuckle.
The perfect thing about it was, you know, with Dilbert, it was all about if you worked in corporate, in the corporate world, you got everything. I mean, that it was, they're not necessarily very funny jokes, but it's the, it was the thing that all of us were sitting there thinking about.
It was just, it was almost too true. It was scary, right? Yeah. And so, but he found his, you know, his opportunity stack where he's good at these things lined up.
Yeah.
And everybody has that. You just got to kind of figure it out. And then I think the last thing on this is we give people the worst advice in the world. Like, do what you're passionate about and you'll never work a day in your life and things like that. Well, it turns out the things that people think of when you say that are their hobbies, right? And the things they're passionate about, everyone else is too. And people will pay to do those things. It's very rare to get paid to do them, right? Like, if you're really into baseball, there's a very few people who are getting paid to be part of baseball. Most people are paying to watch it, right?
Well, travel writers. I mean, that's the, you hear people, oh, I want to be a travel writer. It's like, people would actually just pay to go travel like that and maybe write something about it. But yeah, there are very few actual paid travel writers.
There's so many there's so many travel writers and travel bloggers and travel whatever that sometimes they get discounts at the places they go, but often not.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And like they're, and the really, really top ones are getting paid to go somewhere and review something, but most are not getting anything.
Yeah.
And so it's like, how do you make money doing that? You probably can't, right? Or being a pilot. How many people are paying to take lessons and paying to fly a plane versus the people that are getting paid to do it, right? And so it's not the thing you're passionate about. It's the thing that makes you passionate about that thing. So like, why are you attracted to the things you're attracted to? For me, I figured out that I really like solving hard problems. Like when people say this puzzle's impossible and they walk away, that's when I want to start and I want to figure out the puzzle, right? You would get a 10,000 piece puzzle that takes up the whole kitchen table and I'm like addicted. I don't even sleep, you know? And same thing at work.
You won't shower until you get done with it.
Get kicked out of the house. And I would see this at work. Like everyone else would talk about, they'd stand around the water cooler and talk about sports. I get really passionate about the problem I was solving, and I'd be there till midnight. I knew the names of the janitors and the security guards everywhere I worked, and everyone else was leaving the office at 4:55, right?
Okay.
And because I got passionate about the problem I was solving. And so when I figured out, if I can give my brain a unique problem to solve, I can do any business, any industry, anything, and I'm going to love it because I'm working on a hard problem. It's engaging my brain. And because that's the thing that I'm actually, that's driving the passion, right? So if you can figure out what your thing is that drives your passions, then you can find so many opportunities and you'll then put in more time, put in more effort, more consideration, think about it more than any of your competitors. And that's when you win, right? That's how you break free.
That's awesome. So if you, so great advice there. If you are sitting in a cubicle today and you're saying, I want to figure out a way that I can give myself freedom, what do you think you would do first?
I think people need to reframe risk. So oftentimes people are afraid to do things that they feel could be risky, like starting their own business or quitting their job. And because they have a false sense of security about where they are.
Of course. Yeah.
I remember thinking this when I was working for Big Company Inc. There are these guys that were rock stars that had started the company 25 years ago. And they brought in these big consultants and they were doing a corporate restructuring to position them for the blah, 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 jargon, right? And it really was just another way to do layoffs. And for the first time, these rock stars that had been in this company for 25 years, they all got laid off. And I was like, I thought those people were untouchable.
Yeah.
If they can fire them, then I don't have a chance. Right? And so you think your job is secure because you work somewhere big and you have benefits and you get a steady paycheck, but they could let you go in 1 second flat. And so you're much better off having diversified income streams. Everyone focuses on diversified retirement account investment, and no one thinks about where the income is coming from.
Absolutely.
Like, your risk goes down as you diversify your income streams.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like you said, you're a financial planner.
Yep.
Is that right?
Yes.
So you could have a client fire you today, and it wouldn't make any difference to you, right? And because you have so many clients that are you're working with. And so you're very, it's one industry, but you're very diversified among all these different clients.
Well, but I mean, in addition to that, I mean, you know, and that was a big part of the journey I went on. You know, I'd sold a practice and that gave me some money to then go out and say, you know what, I'd learned how to build income streams and I started diversifying income streams into other things beyond just, you know, the financial planning industry and stuff like that. Yes. You know, 150, 200 clients. Yeah, that's diverse.
So now you're even more diverse.
Yeah, even more diverse because it's like, hey, you know, I've got real estate investments. I've got investments in other businesses. I've got other things that generate, you know, even if it's $1,000 a month or something like that, that's $1,000 that I didn't have to make.
Financial planning next month, you'd be fine because you could. I had a friend that started a big, this is actually one of the most lucky breaks ever. He'd started a big business generating leads for colleges, right?
Okay.
And their whole program was they would get the lead, they'd get them with financial aid, and they'd get them to a college. And colleges would pay a lot for these leads. Well, when Obama was president, he nationalized all of that.
Yep.
And my friend had sold his business 10 days before Obama nationalized it. And he got really lucky because he had a really, really good offer for almost twice as much. And his wife was like, I think we're done. How much is it to be just done? Where are we going to walk away? And they gave him offer for half of the amount. If he didn't, if he stayed for 3 years, he'd get this much. If he walked away today, he'd get this much. He's like, just, I'm going to walk away. Half the money. It was still a lot of money. But 10 days later, that company was out of business. They were doing $300 million a year. 10 days later, they were out of business. And none of them, the investment fund that bought it, didn't know that was happening. No one knew anything about it.
But
just like that, big company out of business, right? And you just never know what happened. And so you feel like you're so secure, but the earth can shift beneath you so quickly.
Sure. I mean, and laws can change. Stuff could, you know. You could easily say, and there has been times, I know, you know, there's been those times where they've talked about, well, you know, we just need to do is have like a national retirement program, you know, where we'll take care of everybody. Okay, well, then that puts a lot of us out of business. And I mean, I've seen it really, you know, change in our business over the years. The every year you make a little less and you got to work a little harder to make up for that. It happens. But yeah, I mean, that's the advantage of saying, okay, I want to have things in multiple different places here. So.
Yep. And so there's people sitting in their cubicle right now who are afraid of the risk of starting something while ignoring the risk they're currently exposed to by not doing anything. And they're just assessing risk completely wrong. And have you read any of Nassim Taleb's books, like The Black Swan, Fooled by Randomness. It's a 3-book series. I can't remember what the other one's called. Anyway, it's pretty cerebral. It's like not light reading. But the summary is Black Swan event, like everyone said, it used to be, we say when pigs fly, people used to say, well, when I see a black swan, you know, until that we've discovered Australia, Europeans anyway discovered Australia and all the swans are black, right? And his point is the things that are impossible that will never happen always happen. And this
guy's
made billions in the stock market betting that those once in 100 year events or once in 1,000 year events will happen more often than once in 100 years or once in 1,000 years. That 100 year flood seems to happen every 20 years, right?
Yeah.
And so he makes bets and he bets against the market based on these things. Like people said, the Dow will never go down 1,000 points in a day. Great. Yeah. I can take the opposite of that and it's going to be really cheap. And guess what? It did. Right. And then he made a couple billion dollars. And that kind of thing happens over and over and over. And so we assess risk wrong all the time. And so you're sitting there at your cubicle feeling secure, You know your job. You know what your paycheck's going to be. You hate going to that office. You hate the people you work with. But you think that the risk is scarier than the pain, right?
Mm.
But you're assessing the risk wrong. Your company could go out of business. You could get fired. You could get injured. There's a million other things that could happen that you don't think will happen, and they will happen. The things you don't think will happen always happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just assess it completely wrong. And in reality, sitting in that cubicle, you're dangerously, dangerously exposed.
Yeah, well, because it's the frog in the boiling pot of water. I mean, it just... Yeah. You sit there. I mean, I had that happen to me in 2003. You know, I was in what I considered a very safe job working for a large financial firm. You know, I wasn't expecting 3 years of negative markets in a row. And finally the company, you know, and I was in a position of kind of really, you know, it was like, okay, I deal with the largest, most successful clients of the firm, and walked in one day and they said, your job doesn't exist anymore. We needed to cut heads, and you're the most expensive heads to cut off at this point. Yeah. And fortunately something happened and we were able to kind of come back for a while. It gave us a little bit of a stay of execution, but still, I mean, you don't know when that's going to happen. And I will tell you that had a dramatic effect on me, kind of a real psychological effect on me for the next, 10 years, basically. But I still,
your personal value is connected with your title at that business.
Yeah. But, well, it's that. And I mean, it's like, hey, I'm the breadwinner for the family. And all of a sudden it looked like, holy crap, there was no bread that's going to be coming in the door. That really put a whammy on me. And I think probably put me in a position where I didn't want to take that risk to jump out, a few years later when I had the opportunity. It was another close to 10, 15 years before I made the leap and became an entrepreneur, and I haven't looked back since. So,
yeah. Can I throw in one other idea here?
Yeah.
I feel like it's an unnatural state. If you go back in time, you go back 150 years, every single person is an entrepreneur. You were a farmer, a blacksmith, a wheelwright, a
merchant,
carpenter.
Yeah. Something. Yeah.
Every single person was an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. And not until the Industrial Revolution and these big factories and big companies did people start, beyond just being like a journeyman or an apprenticeship or something, did people start working for somebody else.
Yeah.
And it's a very unnatural state for humans. You're very powerless. It doesn't feel good. It's unnatural. We have, if you believe in evolution, there's millions of years of people who have worked on their own, doing their own thing, and only 150 years of people being trapped in the business and working in a cubicle or a factory or whatever. And so it's a very, very unnatural state. The reason you hate it is because of that, right?
Yeah.
And you're
genetically not designed for this.
Yep. Yeah. And even making less money, you're probably going to be happier not at the place you are.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Take the risk. Is what I would say. All right. Well, let's transition to the fast five questions now. Ready?
Yep.
All right. First question. You wake up in the morning, business is gone. You've got $500, laptop, computer, place to live, food and clothing. What do you do first?
Oh, man. These days, the fastest way to make money is to help people with money make more, right? So consulting is good. Financial planning is good. I know I could go pick up a lot of consulting work very, very quickly with my experience. Uh-huh. That would be an easier one. I don't think I would, though, because I don't want to trade $1 or 1 hour for dollars. I want to be able to leverage my hours. And so and this is something, I have coding experience, but this is something anyone could do now with AI and the tools that are out there. I would start building something. I would get on Claude Code and I would just start writing code for the idea I've had, the new business, the thing. And I'd create something new. It's essentially free to do. And
And you don't have to have the skill sets to do it.
That's
The AI has the skill sets to do it. You just need to be there to direct what you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, the current situation, like you'll get senior developers that will say this is a lie and that it doesn't work this well and whatever. They're denying the reality that exists. The current situation is one amateur developer with Claude Code or an AI tool is worth 10 amateur developers. One senior developer that's willing to use those tools is probably worth 10 senior developers.
Okay.
And it's getting faster and faster and faster. So by the end of the year, it'll probably be 30 or 40, 1 to 40, you know, and it'll probably, by next year, it'll probably be one amateur developer is worth 10 senior developers. And it's switching so quickly and the tools are advancing so quickly that software essentially is dead in the way it's been done historically.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, that's, I think a lot of the people getting into, you know, they want to get into programming and things like that. It's like, if you don't get, or if you're not making yourself avowed to what's available to you virtually for free, like you said, you're going to be left behind. And I'm sorry, you know, I know people are going to cry about that, that they've lost their jobs, but you know what? You have the perfect opportunity. And instead of sitting there watching the basketball game, you know what? Take some time in your evenings, take some time to do a little bit of that every day. I mean, I've literally for the last 3 years since I was introduced to ChatGPT, you know, every night I've done something or every day. I mean, I have a job where I can basically do whatever the hell I want during the day. And I've spent days just working on this stuff to the point where I know all the I know all the different AIs and which ones, you know, work best for which situations. And, you know, if you're not doing that, you're going to get left behind. And it's
almost too late already.
Right? Yeah, it really is. I mean, you're already behind.
And I use my AI for all sorts of things. If nothing else, you should get on AI and say, I have this idea. I want you to challenge it, right?
Yeah.
Tell me where it's wrong. Tell me where it's dumb. What else could I think about? What else could I consider? And use it as a sounding board, right? Mm. But if you go on your AI right now and say, here's my experience. Here's the things I love. I'm trying to figure out where my value stack is and what things I could consider. Give me 100 ideas of things I could do with my experience set. Uh-huh. Like you doing that would take months.
Yeah.
You within an hour, you could have a really, really great list that maybe you don't do any of those, but it would spur so many ideas. Right. I'm thinking about starting this business. Teach me everything I need to know about doing that.
Yeah.
What are the pitfalls? Why do businesses fail that are doing this? Just like, there's so much information there and the way it's presented. If you're not using AI already, you're being left behind. And any job
and learn how to frame it, you know, when you're having that conversation, I need you to think like a consultant that's been in the industry for, you know, 20 years in this industry, you know, let's have this conversation. Now, all of a sudden it kind of frames itself and says, oh, okay, you don't want me to talk about everything. You want me to talk very specifically about this very thing. I had that precise conversation because I'm in the midst of selling a business. And I'm like, okay, that opens up 40 hours a week of my time. I'm not ready to retire at this point. What am I going to, what do I do? And I had that exactly what you said conversation with chat.
I like you're my mentor prompt, right?
Yes.
I'm going to do this while we're talking and see what it says.
Yeah.
I'm going to say, knowing what you know about me, can you give me 10 business ideas? Mm. I actually said 10 creative business ideas nobody has done before, which seems impossible. I don't know if you could even answer this question. Every business has been done. We'll see what it says. We'll see what it spits out for me here in a second. But it's foolish not to use it.
If it spits out some good ones, we'll just shut that part of the video down so that they can't hear it.
Deleted. Like, hey, partner. this one's, okay, so this is based on my current business. It says, AI water concierge for hotels and resorts. White label your water quality test tech and your hydrogen filtration. And create a smart water experience for luxury hotels.
I do this. I go to Baja every year and do the Baja 1000. So nice. This one is annual Baja Entrepreneur Expedition Brand. Take entrepreneurs on a week-long trip to Baja, charge $12,000 per person. You show them the routes, teach them how to drive, and then have business breakout and training sessions. It's really actually a great idea.
Yeah, it's a great way to combine what you love with getting paid a hell of a lot of money.
Franchise your business. I built a tool that finds online creators, influencers, and wholesale accounts using AI. It's scraping the internet, enhancing the data, doing all these things. I've done it just for my business. And it says, take that tool and start selling it to other companies. This business could be worth $5 to $50 million. I'm like, oh yeah, maybe that is a good idea.
Put that one on the list. We'll blank that one out.
Yep. Biometric hydration protocol for pro athletes. Let's see if there's some other things. Family water wellness subscription box. Your best ideas from this list are the Creator Command Center software as a service and the water quality data marketplace. I didn't even talk about what that was, but anyway, those are all great. Not all were great. Some of those were great ideas.
Some of those are great. Yeah, I mean, or yeah, but I mean, you can go from, hey, the Baja thing. Okay, what are the different ways that I could do that? How could I put this together? And boom, all of a sudden, you know, it might come up with an idea where you're like, holy crap, that's easy to do or would be worth it.
My next prompt is tell me how to launch the Baja idea, right?
Yeah.
And it's going to give me a whole bunch of ideas. One of the things I like to do with it too, is I like to say, is this your best work? Analyze what you've done and give me a new version of it that's even better. Are you confident this is the best you can do? Things like that. And what it comes back with is significantly better every time.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's all in the prompts. And I think that's why I tell people you got to practice with it, because until you get results and then you realize, that was kind of, because it's always going to go to the easiest thing first. Okay, here's just a bunch of gobbledygook about this industry or whatever. But once you start forcing it into a corner and saying, okay, I need you to, I think the biggest one is, you know, everything, you know, any idea you have, always it'll come back with, oh, Jeff, this is the greatest idea ever. You're the most brilliant person. Okay,
I've
know this is
not
the greatest
to do
idea.
That, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, I did too. I mean, it was
mentor,
just like,
you're a critical mentor. Your job is to push back and fight me on ideas. And I have to remind every once in a while, because it wants to be encouraging.
Sure.
I get much better results when it's critical of my bad ideas than it's supportive of my bad ideas.
Yeah. And I mean, I've had it, you know, where I've just basically said, okay, I need you to be that really annoying person. Boy, when it is annoying, it's freaking annoying. I mean, it was brutal at that point, but it was okay because, okay, that's what I needed. All right. Next question. What is the biggest business mistake you've ever made? Pick one.
Okay. I'm not going to say a specific failure. I'm going to say a failure that I can't seem to learn from. I had a really good advice one time from a mentor. He'd been very, very successful. And he'd always say the area of your business where you need to work the hardest is on who you hire. And if you spend the energy and hire the right people, all the other problems will solve themselves.
Yep.
The mistake I keep making over and over and over, sometimes I get this dead on and I find the most amazing person and it's life changing. But when things get busy, when you're growing fast, when whatever, I don't seem to have the discipline in the moment to follow what I know to be true. And I'll hire someone out of convenience, or I'll hire someone because it's easy, because I want to get that off my desk. Yeah. And every time I do that, it fails. And I seem to make that mistake over and over and over again.
Yeah, I tend to be the one that sees more in people than they see in themselves. And I had,
Does
I think
work
one
out
of the
for
first,
you?
Nope, never works. I remember I had a guy on, God, it was probably a couple months after I started this show that gave me the best, that sticks in my head every time I go to hire somebody like this. He goes, if you hire turkeys and expect them to be eagles, they're just not going to, it's just not going to happen.
Well, and here's the other thing is there are no values that exist in the market. The market is efficiently priced, right? So people look for, oh, I'm going to get a deal on this stock. I have insider knowledge or whatever. And it never works because if you know it, everyone else knows it too, right? The price, the stock of the price today is what it's worth. And, it's the same is true with employees. If you think, oh my gosh, this person's great and they're only $60,000. The truth is that guy who is $250,000 and is an expert in this, he's going to 10X his value. And the person that's 60 might 1X their value. And it just works out that way every single time. So you just have to hire the best person you can get.
Yeah. You take it down market to hiring somebody off of Upwork, you know, and you get, you're going to get people that'll say, oh, well, I charge $50 an hour and I charge $8 an hour for the exact same thing. And I can tell everybody out there that $8 person is going to cost you more time and money than that $50 person every day.
And I would take it even further is when you do that search, there's somebody who's $50 an hour. There's also somebody who's $250 an hour.
Yeah.
And chances are, you're going to get more value out of the more expensive one.
Probably.
It's not always true. It's not universally true. Some people charge a lot and they're terrible at their job or, you know, whatever. But if you take the time to find the right person and you think about the value of solving the problem rather than what you're paying them. Like, if I can solve this problem I'm hiring this person for, what's it worth to the business? Then it doesn't matter what you pay them, right? Like some of these AI developers, back to that conversation, some of them, Elon hired all this team to get Grok AI going, right? Some of those guys were paid billions of dollars, literally billions of dollars to leave where they were and
every dime.
And they're no longer at Grok because they got the system going and he doesn't need them anymore. He's like, I'm not going to keep paying him $2 billion a year.
Yeah.
Now that they built the system, someone else can run it, right? And, but they were worth every single penny. And you're like, how could a software developer be worth $2 billion a year? Well, cause he could go do his own and make 10. So,
Well, and I mean, seriously, I think Elon, it was from start to finish cause he got pissed at Sam Altman. I mean, from start to finish, it was like a year and a half that he built Grok AI. And I mean, it far superior in a lot of instances. I mean, anything analytical, hands down, it blows everything away.
Grok will win in the long run. It's a little behind. I think Claude is better than Grok on most of the stuff right now.
Claude threw me for a loop because I hadn't used it. I used it a lot for writing and editing, and I hadn't really used it. And I just happened to be in it working on something and turned around and I was like, you know what? I have an idea and I'm going to see what Claude's idea came up with. And I was so blown away by the, not just the fact that it came up with this very good idea, but how it presented that idea to me, which I think is its next level. You know,
have you
looked at their finance
model that they just launched?
No, I haven't.
You need to start building tools on that. It's amazing. The Claude Cowork thing is really cool too. Have you tried that at all? Where it can take over your computer and do things?
Yeah.
I'll give you an example. When they launched it, it's only about a month old. Well, maybe two, but when they launched it, I pulled it up and I'm like, how can I use this tool to improve my life? You know, what can I do? What are you good at? And you know, it's explaining how it works, that it can run your computer and do all these tasks for you. And I'm like, okay, let me give it a task. I'm like, for years, I've thought about cleaning up my contact list. It was just such a mess, duplicate contacts, all these things. I'm like, all right, can you fix my contact list? And it came back and said, it looks like you have 15,000 contacts and blah, 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 blah. Would you like me to do this? And I said, yeah, do it.
And then it
said, okay, what would you like me to do next? I'm like, we'll fix the contacts first. And then we'll do the next thing. And they said, oh, I already fixed the contacts. Now you have 3,000 contacts, no duplicates. It took it less than 30 seconds. And I couldn't believe it. And then this is the one that blew me away, is I said, can you analyze all the files on my computer and come up with a storage solution and a file naming structure to get things organized? It came back and it said, your computer's a mess. I don't think you could use a file system because you wouldn't follow it. Why don't we do this? Why don't you just drop things wherever you want on the computer, and every night I'll clean it up and put it where it goes. And I was like, what in the world? So yeah. Every night
and
at
then
midnight,
when you need them, just come to me and I'll find them for
me
you.
And I'll tell you where it is. And that's what I started doing. So I'm like, hey, I need this information that's in some document somewhere. Can you find it? Yeah. And it's like, here it is. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is amazing.
Yeah.
So every night at midnight, whatever crap I've saved, desktop and documents and downloads, it just takes it, organizes it, deletes stuff I don't need, save stuff. I'm like,
brilliant.
This is unbelievable. So
yeah.
Sounds really cool. We only made it through question one or two, right?
Yes.
What's okay, a good book that you recommend?
Yeah, you gave me a couple books, but what's a good book that you'd recommend for the audience?
For entrepreneurship, I like The Hard Thing About Hard Things. Have you read that?
Okay. It's not. That's actually pretty cool. Yeah.
Oh, what's his name? He's a famous investor. The people are looking up right now and they already know the answer. I can't think of his name.
No, they've got their AI working for them now.
Yeah, yeah.
You said it's the hard thing for hard things?
The Hard Thing About Hard Things.
The Hard Thing About Hard Things. Okay.
I'm going to ask my AI. Who wrote The Hard Thing About Hard Things? Ben Horowitz, founder of Andreessen Horowitz. Yep. So it's a little bit older book. I think it's at least 10 years old. But it was one of the only entrepreneur books I've ever read that captured what it felt like to be an entrepreneur. The frustration, okay. The joy, it made it very real. And I thought that was a really great book. You know, you have all the classics, the E-Myth and all of those.
Yeah.
Anything you can read is helpful, I think. But I think for entrepreneurs or
hard thing about hard things,
that's
that's pretty good. I'm throwing it on the list, the reading pile. So awesome. We'll put that in the
I read at least one book a week, sometimes two. So
every entrepreneur, every successful entrepreneur I know reads like a maniac, you know? Yeah.
Yeah.
What's a tool that you use every day? Well, you already talked about Claude, but what's a tool you use that you would recommend?
Besides that, I'm a Mac guy. I switched from Mac. I was a hardcore Windows guy and switched to Mac because I need a computer that worked all the time. And
it wasn't updated every 3 days.
Yeah, actually, that's not really the reason I switched. The reason I switched is because it's Unix based, and at the time I was doing a lot of coding, and so all the web software is Unix based, and the Mac is Unix based. So you can set up a server and all the stuff on your computer and duplicate what's on the web, and so it made that part a lot easier. But so in that ecosystem, I love the AirPods. I use these constantly. I actually have two sets, so when the batteries die, I switch because I'm on the phone all day. I love my iPad. This is what I use when I travel, and I take notes on this old-fashioned way, and then the note-taking software turns it, I can search it, and it reads my handwriting. That's super helpful. I love my hydrogen bottle. I take this everywhere. Let me think. These nomadic bags. You seen these advertised everywhere?
Yeah, that's kind of the new thing now. Yeah,
these things are fire. They're so awesome. You can use this as a carry-on. It expands. It's waterproof. I took this to Baja with my laptop and all my stuff in it, and I just would throw it in the back of the Razor, and the dust doesn't get inside of it. It's amazing.
Oh wow!
I also have a big backup battery in there, like I can't remember the brand, but a huge backup battery. There's a sleeve for it in the in the bag, and I can charge all my devices from cords that are routed through the bag. That's amazing.
Nice.
Every day software, Claude is what I'm using right now, but I use Grok for, like you said, for calculations, and I use it for video and images. I use Claude for co-work and code. It's better at the deep thinking. And then I use ChatGPT mostly for the way I would have used Google in the old days.
Have you tried the imaging searches, stuff with Gemini?
Dolly? Oh, I haven't tried the Gemini stuff for a long time. I tried it in the early days when it was horrible.
Yeah,
I haven't tried it recently.
Yeah. But I tried it because chat was having that problem with images for, God, it was probably 2 months. I'd try and get it to do an image and it would just sit there and stare at me. But yeah, for podcast, like thumbnails for YouTube.
Oh, is it awesome?
It's off the charts. Amazing. I mean, I'll just upload a transcript and say, okay, create me a, you know, here's my image, change it up, you know, me in a different position and make a thumbnail. Boom. You know, like 5 minutes later, it's up and running. Boom, boom, boom. And pretty much really almost great. Always on the, I mean, it's really outstanding. So it's
and thumbnails just, make I such a huge difference. On. So,
yeah.
Well, do you have you know how on YouTube you can do multiple thumbnails that'll test which one works the best?
Yeah, and then, A/B. Yep.
So you do that with Gemini? Do you have a generate 5 thumbnails and put up and see which one works?
I'll typically do 3 because I don't want to do more than 3. But yeah, I'll do that and say, okay, just I started doing that when they started doing A/Bs. And I'm like, this is awesome. It's easy.
That's really
you flop it on there. And, you know, like it goes for like a month. And then all of a sudden it, you know, it'll say, okay, well, this is the best one. Let's go with that, which is fantastic.
All right. I'm going to throw out a random tool before we move to the last question.
Let's go.
I switched my pants to backpacking pants.
Okay. Interesting.
If you just go to Amazon, and there's really high-end ones. You don't have to get the high-end ones. But there's these pants that are full of pockets. They're waterproof, lightweight, and they're stretchy.
Okay.
And I'm wearing some now. These are ones I work with.
Don't take your pants off. Don't. You know, we're good.
See, they look weird, right?
Okay. Yeah.
The reinforced knees and things. But most of them that I have are all in black. I've switched all my pants to these. And because I don't care what I dress like and what I'm doing.
Yeah.
But there's a spot for my cell phone. They're waterproof. They last forever. They're stretchy. They're comfortable. They're breathable. That's like such a hack. All I do is wear t-shirts and these pants every day. And
life is good.
I don't care what meeting I'm going to. I don't care what I'm doing. It's like, Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg in his hoodies, you know, just the same thing every day.
Hey, you know what? You're a billionaire. You can do whatever the hell you want to. So that's perfect.
Someone watching this is going to be like, I'm going to try those pants. And then they're going to make
those
a comment
pants
in
2 out.
Months.
Josh,
like, those freaking pants changed my life.
All right. Last question. What's your definition of freedom?
I think a lot of people think freedom is a lack of responsibility. I think there's no joy in that journey, right? So the only way we find happiness and joy as a human is by taking on as much responsibility as we can. And as you do that, you're benefiting others and the joy then flows back to you. It's the hedonism paradox. Like as you seek pleasure, joy evades you. As you seek responsibility, joy flows to you. And so I think if you can control the responsibilities that you take on, then you're truly free. Right.
Yeah.
If someone is dictating to you what you're responsible for, then you feel like a prisoner. But as soon as you are able to give yourself that list of what you're responsible for, then you feel free. Not that you're doing less, you're probably doing more. You're probably busier and you're more stressed out and you're working harder, but you're just happier about it.
Yeah. Brilliant. That was a fantastic answer. One of the best this year. So thank you.
Oh, good.
Josh, if somebody's interested in learning more about you, learning about the Eco Water business, where's the best place to find
Or stretchy pants?
Or stretchy pants? Yeah, we're going to find some of those and put them on the show notes page.
They can Google Josh Carr Superstar. I've optimized for that, and so I come up pretty much everywhere for Josh Carr Superstar. If they want to check out my current business, ecowater.com. And give hydrogen water a try. And the other URL I threw out was hydrogenstudies.com, where you can see all the research and the science behind it. But those are the best places. I'm on every platform. I really don't go on socials much, but reach out on LinkedIn or something. And
yeah.
So
All right, I'd love to talk. Well, thank you so much. It was an absolute pleasure. Great conversation. Anytime I get to geek out on anything AI, life is good. So thanks a lot. Appreciate you coming on today. And folks, as always, all the stuff's in the show notes. We'll try and find Josh's stretchy pants and put those in there too. But thanks a lot for joining us. As always, make sure you subscribe to the channel, and we'll see you guys back here the very next time.
Thank you for listening to the Freedom Nation podcast. You can find us on Apple Podcasts and all the major channels. Wherever you're listening, please subscribe to the channel and leave a rating and review. If you have friends and family that could benefit from their own Freedom Day, please share with them. Finally, join Freedom Nation by following us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.